Nothing compares to speaking life into kids. Nothing compares to watching my own girls grow up, learn about Jesus, right? Talk about his love, talk about his passion for us. Nothing can compare to that.
Welcome to Stories of His Glory, a podcast where coaches, athletes, and partners of FCA share powerful stories of how Jesus Christ is transforming lives through the world of sports. Each episode, you'll hear real stories of people who've experienced the life-changing love of Jesus. Stories that will encourage, challenge, and inspire you to see how God is moving in and through the world of sports and each of our lives.
Welcome to today's episode of the Stories of His Glory podcast. I'm Evan Erickspoon, area representative with FCA, and today I'm excited to introduce to you Tommy Butler. Tommy is a physical education teacher as well as the head football coach and track and field coach at Central Cass High School in Castleton, North Dakota. Listen in as Tommy shares the stories of his playing and coaching career, how he has come to become a follower of Jesus Christ, and the role faith has played in his life as a teacher, coach, and father. Here's my conversation with Tommy Butler. So Tommy, thanks for sitting in on being with us here today. It's great to have you.
I appreciate it, man. I'm excited.
So today's our first time formally meeting one another, but for me, I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit just through some of the people that I've talked to in the area or who have dealt with you. So Troy Raisler, the golf coach here at Central Cass, Nate Safe, Tate Ingett was one of your former players, Troy Soljum, an FCA area rep. Just hearing those guys talk about you, just talking about how you're a great coach, but an even better person. So I'm just looking forward to this conversation a lot.
Yeah, man, you named some freaking dudes right there.
We talked a little bit about, before coming on, how you're an Oregon guy. You cheer a little bit more for the Ducks, but that might have come out of the fact that you like to just cheer for winners.
Yeah, I'm a big winner guy.
Yeah, so you cheer for winners, which is awesome because you're a guy, you're a competitive guy, and you like to win. You don't like to be on the losing side. Tell me a little bit more about just your personal experience with trying to achieve, whether it's your new, I don't know if it's a newer found passion of running or in coaching, but just how you strive to be excellent in everything you do.
Yeah, I think that's a phenomenal question. I would say that growing up, always had a passion for working hard. Everything that I did was as hard as I could do it. My dad taught me from a young age that you throw a ball as hard as you can, you swing as hard as you can. Everything you do is as hard as you can possibly do it. And I think that just followed me in everything except school. School, I really struggled in probably my middle school age to high school age. And really that was due to, I got put in some, at a real young age, I started to kind of struggle in school a little bit. And then moved up to middle school and had honestly, a traumatic experience because I couldn't spell the word the. And I didn't know how to spell it because they said the instead of the. And I didn't know that those two are spelled the same way. And everybody in my class laughed. I grew up in a really poor neighborhood. And the middle school that I went to was a pretty affluent one. And the best athlete, best student in the class had to grade my paper and immediately yelled out on day one of school, "This guy doesn't know how to spell the." And I absolutely shut down and I decided I'm never going to speak. I'm not going to talk. And so people thought I didn't really know what I was doing. And like I said, I completely shut down in school. My mom ended up actually coming to school with me for a week because my grades, I had less than a 1.0 GPA. My mom came to school with me to find out why do I suck in school. And that kind of like put me back into like trying. But what I found out was that if I cheat, I can actually stay with everybody else. So I became a tremendously good cheater. I never studied. I never did anything because I was so far behind. So I wouldn't ask a question because I didn't want anybody to know this guy's can't spell the word the. And so I cheated my entire junior high school career. Basically, that's how I got through my life was finding ways to cheat because I didn't know what I was doing. And that followed me all the way to college. So I struggled in school there because I don't have the basic skills. And so I had to, again, rely on this personality. And instead of trying to learn something, because I felt like I was so far behind, I decided I'll just wing it and I'll try to cheat my way through it and be this conniving kind of sleazebag to figure my way out or figure my way through school. And it really wasn't until I met my wife, who I tried to date for a long time, but she was the one that kind of found out that you really don't know what you're doing. You're in this real hurt bag place of, you're just in this constant state of trying to play catch up. And honestly, she put me back together right at the tail end of my college career with academics. And then I started to develop this love for learning. So I went from a guy that was a cheater that never wanted to study, never wanted to learn, never wanted to do anything outside of sports, to now I have a, you know, I tell people all the time, I'm a really boring person. I don't do anything. I run, I play with my kids, I love my wife, and I coach. That's it. That's all I do. I don't have hobbies. I don't, my only hobbies are reading things on Twitter, watching videos, and trying to accumulate as much knowledge about those things that I love. That's it. That's the only things I do. And I think that has really been a super effective thing for me, because I have that passion of doing everything as hard as I can. Now I try to love my wife as hard as I can, getting saved and finding out that Jesus loves me harder than I could ever try has dramatically influenced everything else that I do. So now it's not just this work hard because your dad said so. It's I'm going to work hard because that's what Jesus has called me to do. And it's, again, radically shaped who I am. And I think that's really the, all of those things, I would never change any of those things for anything. I think God has, again, uniquely wired me for that, to now share that story with other people of, I tell kids all the time, you could be a bad student like I am and still be a professional teacher. So just because maybe you're not great at school right now, it doesn't mean that you're a dumb kid that can't learn how to spell the word the.
Yeah, that's awesome. That's awesome. And so growing up in Bend, Oregon and playing sports, do you feel like at that time you found a little bit more of, prior to being saved, your identity wrapped up in those things, because that's something that you felt like you could direct your attention to?
Yeah, I mean, that was the only thing I was good at. Like I said, I wasn't good at school, had a hard time with friends. Again, we come from a very affluent town, but I was a poor kid. So trying to find your way into these different spots is tough. I didn't have birthday parties after I was probably 8 years old because I didn't want anybody to see where I lived. So I stopped doing that kind of stuff. I found out that people like you if you're good at sports. So as long as I was in a sport, you could be friends with those people. The moment that you were not in that sport, now you're no longer friends with them. So I for sure found my identity wrapped in sports 100%. And it wasn't until I had a coach, and I wrestled in high school. He was our, at that time, assistant principal. His name was H.D. Waddell, who ended up being principal of the year later on, and then was Oregon State's chaplain for their football team after being named principal of the year. He came in and was this absolute fireball for Jesus. And that's what turned me on, was seeing this guy that is extremely passionate about life, but yet he's fire. Like, 'cause I always thought that Christians were just a bunch of white dudes that played acoustic guitar and were as lame as possible. And then I met this guy and I went, that guy's a dude. Like, I want what he's got. He seems like he is like crazy passionate and still loves Jesus. So that started my journey in that you don't have to be just this football player. And so I think it went through high school. That was the first seed that was planted. Had another wrestling coach that was a pastor. His name was Russ DeVos. Same kind of deal. Planted that seed. Went to junior college. Again, I think the Lord's hand was just constantly over me in that junior college. I roomed with a guy that loves Jesus. We had a rule that when we would ride to practice together, that we had to listen to Jesus music. I don't know what they're singing about, but I'm like, I can get behind that. Only on Sundays, though. The rest of the time, we were listening to all kinds of wild stuff. But again, just like planting those seeds and then moving to Valley, left the beach of California to move to Valley City, North Dakota, hating my life at the time, was engaged at 19 to a girl. So again, living just a completely wild life. And then my roommate is this dude from Miami, Florida, Haitian brother that was like, hey, you want to come to church with me? I can't say no because I'm a people pleaser. So I go to church with him. I don't know anything about Jesus. We're singing about this song and there's the word hallelujah on there. And I can't pronounce that. But he was just loving in the sense of, he didn't make me feel like, again, that you're dumb because you don't know how to read the word hallelujah or what that word means. But never like pushed me into that. So again, just continued to shape, like, you can be all these different things. Like, you don't have to be just a football player. You don't have to just be a weightlifter. You don't have to just be a, so there was always somebody in my life that was like pointing me towards Jesus. And then I had another friend that's also from Miami that invited me to church and was like, which church do you want to go to? And we went and they started telling me about how went through kind of the Ten Commandments and you're trying to make these checklists. Like, I've never killed anybody. Maybe I do have a little bit of hate in my heart. And I'm going through this list. And if you have one of these, you're a sinner in God's eyes. And I've always said that I didn't need to hear that God loved me because I had parents that just adored me, that poured life into me. I needed to hear that you're a wild, wicked sinner. And at that moment, I was like, man, I need to find out more about this man that they're talking about, this Jesus guy. Because I was pretty convicted, but I didn't know what to do. And it was a completely wild story of first getting introduced to Jesus there, meeting with this guy, get a job out in Stanley as a long-term sub. And while I'm out there thinking, man, when I come back to Stanley, because I end up getting a job there, I'm going to come back to Fargo to pack my stuff up. And I remembered thinking when I was leaving Stanley, not a Christian, going, man, I need to practice drinking more because these guys are going to drink me under the table. And I don't want to be some noob out here that can't drink with these guys. I think I could drink a lot of beers, but I need to drink like these cats do. And coming back, and there was something there that was like, man, you got to go back to that church. You got to go back there and find out more about this guy. And going back, and they have an altar call. And I stood up to go and I got stopped in the aisle. I couldn't move. And I swear on everything, something pushed me forward and then I couldn't stop. And I ended up giving my life to the Lord afterwards. That, again, it just absolute radical change. Go from a guy that's literally a complete unbeliever, wants nothing to do with him, to a guy now that can't live without him.
Yeah, that's incredible. I think that's so cool to see. Just the thought of you were not looking for anything, and you even shared like you had parents that were super supportive and that God just met you where you were, that Christ just met you right where you were at and revealed himself to you through, you mentioned different seeds planted. You look back on a lot of our lives and we don't see it in that moment. I know we've heard different stories just even throughout FCA, throughout the state, of people who they don't realize it until they look back like, wow, this guy really cared about me. This guy really loved me. And it's all just manifest from the love of Christ trying to meet us where it's at, where we're at. So that's incredible. That's awesome. Kind of setting the stage, you've just become a new follower of Christ and you're moving to Stanley to take on your first head coaching job? Or
not yet.
Not yet.
Okay. I had moved from Fargo, and at that time, so I was engaged at 19, broke that off, was engaged with my wife, my now wife, and before I left, we ended up splitting off because I started to get this new passion for Jesus. And she grew up Catholic and I'm a questioner. I got questions. I want to know about what's going on. She was like, you know, I grew up Catholic. I want you to come be Catholic. I said, sure, I can do that for you. Because again, I'm just trying to people please her. And I go to Catholic service and I'm telling you, I took like my personality. I don't know anything. I am completely... Again, in North Dakota, you know, it seems like everybody goes to a church. You might not be a believer, but you probably have been in it. I had never been in one. So the first church that I go to is like a old school, like Latin Catholic church. So there's people are speaking Latin in there. And I have no idea what's going on. Guy comes in, they're swinging smoke. They have the kneeling boards in there. I thought that was a footrest. So the looks I was getting were like, what are you doing? I'm writing down everything I can and I go to meet with my wife. I'm like trying to ask her all these questions. We just started butting heads with, because I can't figure this out. Why does everybody do these things? And at the time I was going to a really legalistic church and didn't know it. And so this guy I'm meeting with is like honest putting me and my wife at odds, but it turned out to be the greatest thing because my wife and I ended up splitting up because we were literally going in two opposite directions. Now again, I was going towards a real legalistic way. But we end up splitting up. And the night that we split up, we lived in an apartment building next to each other. And I had walked over and one of my friends that had brought me to church the first time as a believer. And he's like, Tommy, when you go over there, you got to remember God makes the bed. He doesn't need your help tucking the sheet in. You're a filthy dude. Just let him work. I'm like, yeah, I won't. I walked over there and it was like freaking Bible beat down. Why don't you know this? Well, and I just went in on all these things. And she was like, this isn't going to work. And I remember walking out of there thinking, you loser, like you said you weren't going to do this. And yet here you are, you know, this guy that thinks he knows about Jesus, and I am just crushing her with stuff. And I walked home and I laid on my, and I'm sitting in a pair of jeans, and I laid down on my bed that has no bed frame because I'm going to be moving to Stanley. And I laid down on my bed and I said, God, I quit. I quit. Every time that you start to work in my life, I ruin it. I'm always trying to do everything that you're supposed to do. I quit. I'm done. Whatever you want me to do, I'll do it. And I knew that I was going to move to Stanley again on everything that I love. I laid back on my bed and I am like boohoo snot crying, right? Like big time crying. I've just lost the love of my life. I'm going to go move to Stanley. And in that moment, there was a legitimate something came off of my body. I fell asleep with my feet hanging over the bed on the ground, and I slept for, I don't know, 10, 12, 14 hours, never moved, pair of jeans on, woke up and was like, okay, all right, God, what are you like? Where are we going? I remember meeting with the guy from that legalistic church saying, hey, I think I got saved last night. And we were working through the 7 steps to God, this book, because you couldn't get saved unless you went through this book. And did these little things or whatever of, okay, now you're officially saved through this little book that we had. And I remember driving to Stanley going, I could wreck this car and I'm going to heaven. This is awesome. I don't know, maybe I should jerk the wheel. Like, I want to go see Jesus. And moving up there with this newfound, like, nothing can touch me. I know who Jesus Christ is. Like, all right, what are we doing? Like, where are we going? And getting up there, my roommate is a believer. Wild town, right? There's some wild folks up there, but we essentially, there's about 5 of us now that are all become like really tight friends. I teach halftime in Powers Lake, meet a guy named Seth Wistoff, who becomes one of my best friends, was one of the best men in my wedding, who's younger than I am, but is white hot fire for Jesus. And we absolutely explode. Like my faith goes bananas up there. I end up becoming the head football coach and we go 0-9. We are horrendous, but it was the greatest season of my life because of what God was doing in and through me and through my friends that were up there that were just constantly pouring into me. And my faith exploded and my teaching year exploded, and it was, ended up getting back with my wife. And now we're happily married. We're going to be happily married for 10 years here, August 1st. And if we wouldn't have split up, there's no chance that we're together now.
Wow. That's awesome. Just to see the, you know, you probably going off to Stanley, like you even said, what's next? Like what now? And just to be wrapped up in that type of obedience of God, what do you have for me? I'm done steering the wheel. Like it's like almost literally like, for you.
Yeah, for real.
Almost, yeah. Literally, like, I'm done steering the wheel.
Jerked his wheel over here.
And so just to see that God took this time where we talked about you being a winner and wanting to be a winner, this 0-9 season, and yet probably the most impactful year of your life, not because of the competition, but because of the work that God was doing behind the scenes on
and pulling me aside too, right? Like getting me away from ever. Like there's, again, growing up in Oregon, living in California, we're talking, there's millions of people that I'm around. I said after I left Valley, I would never move to a smaller town. And now I go live in Stanley. I teach at Powers Lake. The graduating class that year, I think, was 7. Like incredibly small. So yet, in a sense, isolates me, yet doesn't leave you there. He doesn't leave me, but just pours into me, continues to build people around me, even though I'm in the middle of nowhere. And yet it was exactly where I needed to be, and then allowed me to continue to build my faith. And I think so that going through those things, now moving back to Fargo, now living in Castleton, like, again, I would never change any of that for anything. I've gotten to have the lowest of lows and being 0-9 and been really, really close to winning a state championship on the 1-yard line. And I've said this for a long time, like I want to win a state championship just so I can, because I know this is what I'm going to say. None of that matters. Like being 0-9 or being at that time 1 yard away from being a state title, nothing compares to the love of Jesus. Nothing compares to speaking life into kids. Nothing compares to watching my own girls grow up, learn about Jesus, right? Talk about his love, talk about his passion for us. Nothing can compare to that. So that's what I love the most about what he's done through my life. And now, again, putting me in Castleton, and I've had opportunities to leave and go other places and do that. And there's zero part of me wants to do that because I really truly feel like, again, I'm built for a purpose and that purpose is to be here right now.
Yeah. Whether you're a secular coach or whether you're a Christian coach, like you want to impact kids' lives. And being a Christian coach, like we know that after the wins and losses, there's so much more to your life. And even after life, there's so much more to where you end up for eternity and who you're serving. Be able to know that there's coaches, you know, who've had these crazy life experiences that are breathing into or discipling these kids or just sharing their life experiences with these kids. Like you said, you're an open book. Like you want to be able to walk through these situations with kids. That's incredible. It's uplifting. It's awesome to hear. And so you kind of talked about loving being here in Castleton, which is a great town. So my question for you is, as you set your roots here, what do you feel like is the ministry? What is God doing through as believers are called to minister wherever we are, whether like me, you're on staff with FCA, or like you, you're a teacher and a coach. What does ministry look like for you here in Castleton?
Yeah, I would say that my ministry is just, again, it's the constant trying to be as open as I can. I want kids ask me that. I tell them, right, you can ask me any question. I'm going to tell them anything that I can about my life story. So as a teacher, I try to do that. As a coach, and even, you know, again, still with teaching, there's so many times where I'll pull kids in, pull them aside, pull them into the office, trying to dive deeper into what is going on. Because that was the thing that I felt like. I had one coach in high school that did that, and his name's Scott Novelli. And still to this day, him and I are, we probably talk once a month, if not more than that. He is for sure one of the biggest influencers of my life because he took the time to get to know who Tommy Butler was, not the football player, but the kid. He took me to breakfast one time just to talk ball and then to talk life, and continued to do that. And that's how I try to do that with kids is, again, I want you to be a great football player, but I know that you will be a much better player for me if you know how much I care about you, if you know that I actually do love you. I try to tell kids that all the time, right? If I get a moment to tell a kid that I love them, I'm going to tell them that because I don't know if you hear that at home. So trying to make sure I do that. When it comes to football specifically, before our home football games, my offensive coordinator and I, Riley Iverson, we run a chapel. Kids don't have to come to it. When I first started doing it, there's about four kids that come to it. Last year, I think before our playoff game, we had junior high kids, our eighth graders come up and practice with us. So they're around. I think our last time that we had it, we had 56 kids in there. Getting to minister really to kids for about 10 to 15-ish minutes there. In my world, what I try to think of is, again, this could be their one shot to hear the gospel. So make sure that these kids hear about who Jesus is. And again, I always think of it as an unbeliever. I come from everything as though you know nothing. I don't care if you go to church or not. I'm going to act like you've never heard that this man actually came and died on a cross for you, not the future you, not this perfect you that you think you got to get to, but the kid you are right now. So trying to make sure that kids hear that's the guy that you're seeking. And again, that it's not this the acoustic guitar, lame-o Jesus that I knew, but this fierce, radical, in my mind, again, almost psychotic, like, I am so crazy about you that I'll die for you, even though you don't love me, even though you blatantly turn your back on me daily, but I still love you, and I still reach out for you. And I think that's the thing that I've learned the most about being a dad is watching my own girls do things. And there's a moment where you're like, what are you freaking doing? I told you not to do that. And yet, even in that moment, go, I'll die for you right now. And yet God is unbelievable. Like, in words can't even explain how much of a better father he is than to me. So getting to see that and play that out is, again, I thought that I loved the Lord. I thought that I knew what he was like, what his love was like for me. Until I had children, I was like, it's not even close. And until you get to experience that and see, again, their unwavering love for you, of they're just constantly looking to you. They're constantly, something goes wrong, they're uneasy. What do? They're reaching their hand to you. Hold my hand. And as long as they're holding their daddy's hand, hey, I might be a little scared, but I'm just, what do? They just run to you. Get behind my leg. And that's the thing that I've learned the most is the more that I chase Jesus, the more that I reach for his hand, the more that I cling to him, what can you do? You can't, do you know who my dad is? Like, that's my dad. Like, you can't do nothing to me. My wife had breast cancer this year. And there was a moment where when we found out, like this overwhelming fear of, again, talking to my best friend, Steve, who was the one that brought me to church, I said, as it came out of my mouth, I said, Steve, what am I going to do if my wife dies? How am I going to raise these babies on my own? Again, as that came out of my mouth, what that fear poured out, there was a tenfold tidal wave coming back to me of, and again, it was almost like I could hear God's audible voice saying, you've never raised those babies on your own and you never will. I'll never leave you. I'll never forsake you. And constantly throughout that time of my wife having chemo and all that stuff, the amount of people in this town that just kept pouring out, kept reaching out, kept calling, kept trying to help us out any way they could was like, you know, it's just that reassuring of God's hand going, I told you, I told you, I'm never going to leave you. You can't run from me. I have you in my hand. So that has been such a huge thing for my wife and I of every time that you feel this fear, every time that you feel like, oh, how can we do this? He's going to provide. I don't know when. I don't know how. Again, it might be I need my wife. So just so everybody knows, I need my wife. But even if something was to happen to her, knowing that just like he's always done, he's constantly put somebody there. He's constantly held us together. And again, like I said, I watch videos, right? That's all I do. There's a pastor in Texas, his name's Matt Chandler. He said that one time his son got hauled away in an ambulance and the door shut and he couldn't follow him because they got lost throughout Dallas. And he goes, there was a moment where it was like God was saying to me, do you trust me enough to take your son? What if I take your son? Are you going to be okay with that? And going, man, what if God takes my wife back? Because I'm supposed to be her, I'm supposed to hold her hand, and then I'm supposed to give her back to God. I'm supposed to do that with my kids, right? Raise them up, hold their hand, and then I'm going to give them to their husband. What if he takes them before that? Are you okay with that? Or is it you're supposed to be in charge of that? And continuously replaying that in my mind, going, okay, you're better than me. These are your kids. This is your wife. That's your daughter. Make sure that you are seeking, loving, guiding, protecting, doing all of that. Because again, I built you for that. And it might get hard. You might have times where you feel like you can't do it. But the reminder of I built you for this, you don't get to be a punk. You don't get to punk out on that. You have to stick your face in there like a football player, even when you don't want to. That's what I've made you for. And I think that part of Jesus, I think, is where it's like just his courageousness of, I've made you for more than what you think you can. And when you feel like I can't do it, you're right. You can't. Come to me. Just come back. Just hold your dad's hand, because you can't. You can't defend yourself. So run to me and I'll do it. That's what I think is the best. And I think that's how I try to tell my kids, my own players, that stuff, right? I'm going to fail you. I'm going to call a stupid play multiple times in a game. I'm going to do something wrong, but know that I am doing everything that I can to try to make sure that you are in the right position. And when you fail, I still love you. I might try to tell you how to do it better, but it's not because I don't love you. It's because of this passion that I have. And it's because of what God has done in me that I know that you might do something wrong. That's not you. That's something either I've taught you poorly, but I got to make sure that I pull that emotion aside. And again, I'm bad at this because I'm a highly emotional person. I have to pull that emotion out and still remember there's a human in there. There's still somebody that's made in the Imago Dei, right? That kid is made in God's image. Make sure God has put you over that kid to minister to him. So don't you dare get in there and think, just get on your soapbox and tear that cat down. And again, I suck at that. I'm still bad at that, but I'm always trying to chase that part down where I could be better at that. And remember that that's not your player. That's God's son. That's God's daughter right there. What would he do if he was standing next to you? Would he say, well done, my good and faithful servant? Or would he go, come on, man.
Come on.
Figure it out. Right. I know you're going to do that.
Well, I think like you look at a mindset of a coach and how
You can throw out all the coaching one-offs that I'm sure you've used, that I've used through my career. Just nothing's worth unless it's hard. You shared that earlier. You don't see growth unless there's pain. And so just to hear that as you've continued to go through these tough moments, that God is just like, hey, if you just jump through this tough moment, if you just push through this painful moment of learning that your wife has cancer, like, I'll catch you. It's going to grow. Like, we're going to grow. Your relationship, you're going to grow closer to me. And just to see that the provision of God and the power that he has over our lives. And, you know, you talked about him being like a parent. And, you know, me, now that I'm 28 years old, I look back and I'm like, man, my parents really knew what they were talking about. Sure, in the same way in like my relationship with Christ, where you go through something hard when you're young and you're like, this is, why am I dealing with this? You almost put up the why me factor. And then you get 10 years down the road and you're like, oh man, Lord, I would not be who I am today. I would not be as close to you if it weren't for that situation. Like, just the wisdom that time can bring and reflecting on those things as it comes to, you know, God was there. We talked about God being there early in your life too. You just didn't see it yet in those seeds. And so that's just incredible stuff, man. That's awesome to hear. It's incredible that you're just reaching out and touching the lives of these students, of your own kids, as you pour into these different people, your family, your athletes, your students. What are some ways you feel that you're being poured into? I know you alluded to the community having your back and pouring into you, but as far as like spiritual growth, and what are ways you feel you're being poured into right now?
Yeah. Well, I mean, one I would say is, and you talked about one of those guys that you mentioned, and there was Troy Soldier. I'd say that Troy's like that awesome uncle that you got. I don't know how many things I've told Troy that I think, man, this guy's probably going to think I'm a dummy or something. And Uncle Troy is just so full of wisdom. One of my biggest things that I really, really struggled with was the fact that I would see these professional and college coaches that are Christians like Tony Dungy. I'm not like Tony Dungy. Tony Dungy is quiet. He's like Troy. He's very mild-mannered. That's not who my personality is. So I kept trying to be this person that I'm not. And knowing that I can't do that. And that was a really hard thing for me. And Troy finally asked me, he said, and again, this was like a huge thing that unlocked so much inside of me when it comes to coaching, was, Tommy, who do you think gave you that passion? Where did that come from? God did. And he goes, so do you think that he doesn't want you to use that? No, I guess he probably does. And he's like, if he made you this specific way, he wants you to use this specific gift, this specific tool that only you can do. You are uniquely and wonderfully made. Don't run from that. Now, you also have to know there's pitfalls with being a highly emotional guy. You can make people ramp up and you can also crush people. And that was what I was always dealing with, was this. I always had these massive ups and downs, but I had a hard time with, well, I shouldn't be that way. And Troy really helped me see that, no, it's okay that you have these huge ups. It's the downs that you can't have. It's the get back to being level-headed. You don't have to. I still go back to this probably about 3 years ago when we were playing in the quarterfinals, and one of my best players, who literally never makes mistakes, playing an option team, and he tackles a dive when he's supposed to be a pitch player or a quarterback player. And I lose it because we're in a high-pressure situation. It's a first drive of the game, and I am going psychotic on the sideline. And game gets over, and I look back and I start picturing these plays of watching my coaches ever since that moment. They're yelling like crazy. Kids on the sideline are going spastic. And I did that. I said, that's what you were supposed to do. And so now, like, having Troy, you know, try to help me with, again, I just tell him how I'm feeling, what I'm going through. He's been a guy that just constantly pours into me that way. I have there's a couple pastors at my church, Mike Hall and Stephen Abbott, are guys that I meet with, we talk with. We talk about loving Jesus. Matt Short is another one who's come out. He's our family pastor who's come out. He's actually been one of the guys that's led a chapel for us. Cody Weckerly is a pastor in town here, that another guy he's like a savant when it comes to biblical knowledge. Again, we're way totally different kinds of people. You know, I love to hear that kind of stuff from those guys. You know, again, I'm a knowledge seeker. So if you got something, even though you might be different than me, if you got something, I want to know it. And then guys like Seth Wistoff, again, just, we talk all the time about what we're going through and trying to share wisdom with each other. And then Nate Say, those are guys that I'm always trying to get stuff from. And then again, just people that are online guys. Philip Anthony Mitchell's a pastor I listen to. He said Matt Chandler's another one. I'm always trying to learn something from somebody. those would be ways that I try to do that. And again, I can tell when I'm not finding those people, when I'm not reading my word enough, when I'm not digging into finding these people or having these people, you know, talk with me. I've been a Christian for 15 years and man, it's daily, right? Like you got to pick up your cross daily. And sometimes I think I forget that. And it's like, man, yeah, I've been solid for a while. I'm good. And it's like instantaneous, like temptations, devil coming in and he's, you know, speaking into you. Hey, remember you were that guy. Remember you're that dummy that can't spell the, don't forget that. And he just bombards me with it. But like I said, the more that I reach to Jesus, the more that I'm surround myself with these other people, it's like, I can't get touched there. But the moment that I think I'm tough enough and I got this, my sword is sharp. No, it isn't. No, it isn't. Cause you didn't sharpen it. You've just been beating it on rocks the whole time and now it's dull. So trying to make sure that I keep those guys around me is a huge thing for me.
It's awesome. I think that's, I coach golf and my guys, as soon as they say like, I think I figured it out. Oh boy, you're in for it because the next 3 days are going to be a tough 3 days for you. And just the same way how when we try to do it on our own or we think we got it figured out and we disconnect from whether it's our spiritual mentors, whether it's from digging into the word of God and spending time with the Lord and putting that first and foremost in the day, it'll wreaks havoc so quick. And before you know it, you're underwater and you're like, how did I get here?
Right.
You know, yeah, so
100%.
That's awesome. And so you are in this region here with, remind me, is it region?
So we're actually football? Moving up a level. So now we're on the east region of AA.
Okay.
Now.
Gotcha. These last few years have been in the same region as Kindred and Nate Safe, our state director, coaches for Kindred. And so you guys are 1 and 2 every year, depending on who's going to win the region title. And so what does that relationship look like with the fact that off the field, you guys are on the same team, you have the same mission, and that's to show kids Christ's love.
Absolutely.
But when it comes to Friday at 7, Kindred versus Central Cass, both you guys want to win. And you're hyper-competitive guys, and that would probably equate to when I'm playing my brothers, is off the course or off the field, whatever you need from me, I'm there for you. But when it comes to competing, man, I'm your worst enemy. So what does that relationship look like?
Yeah, so I think there's a couple of things of that. One, I was never, like I told you, like I'm not a bandwagon or I'm a big bandwagon guy, right? So I didn't grow up with like rivalries. Like I wasn't stuck to a team. So you didn't have this like hatred. And when I first came to Castleton, I'm not from here, so I don't understand, again, small town rivalries and all this kind of stuff. And they talked about Kindred and they were, I think at that time we both weren't that good. I think we were both kind of coming up a little bit. And so their now head coach, Eric Burgat, and I both played football together at Valley City State. And so we were both the coordinators and stuff like that. But as I, like when I first got hired here, Nate, we were in a Bible study together and Nate said, oh, you're going to Castleton? Yeah, we hate Castleton. And I kind of laughed again, didn't understand it. And he was like, you know, it's kind of, there's some darkness over there. Some light needs to be shed. And he goes, so maybe it's a good thing for you to go there. But now being here now, you know, like I said, for 10 years, like you could go into my closet. I don't have a blue thing. I can't stand blue. I hate blue. But yet there's like this healthiness, like you said, of this brotherly love in that sense of like Eric and I, we talk literally every week of the football season, except the week that we play each other. Now, they've won way more than we have. You know, you'd be like, oh, that's probably why you hate them, because they beat you guys more than you do. But even if we, you know, let's say we went on a 20-game win streak, I want to go 21. I can't stand those guys. But also, I know that they've made us better. And I would assume that Nate and Eric would say the same thing. And Eric and I have talked about that. This rivalry makes us better because we both know that we coach our teams the right way. We're trying to get our kids to be the best that they can possibly be. We're never settling for... It's never okay that you're second place in that sense that we're always striving for greatness. But at the end of the day, I want to be able to look at my kids. They want to be able to look at their kids. And again, say, what have we done to change them eternally? Have we shared the gospel with them? Because winning a state title is cool. And Nate has always said this. Winning a state championship is awesome. The next day is a regular day, though. The next week at school, you're back to school. You're doing regular stuff. Like, it's the remembrance. It's the journey that we all know is what you love. And again, that's why I really want to win one, just to say that. Like, yeah, I've been telling you when I was 0-9. Like, it'd be great to win. I love to win. But what are we actually doing for these kids? That's the most important thing. But yeah, I mean, you could ask my girls right now, like, hey, girls, what do we think of Kindred? Boo, Kindred, right? We're two thumbs down. Like, you know, and Eric has said that, like that. I think he's got, one of his boys has like a squirrel that he like beats up and stuff like, you know, it's awesome. We want that. Like, now again, I don't want like our fans in the stands like fighting each other. Like, that's ridiculous, but we want to have that stuff that you're shooting for. We want the more that they win, the more that we're chasing, right? The more they have 2 4-star kids on their team. We want that. Of course we do, but we don't want to become, again, ridiculous with it where it's, you're literally hating those kids. And again, I think we had that a couple of years ago. It's gotten way better. When I coached in the Shrine game, they had a few of their boys that were on the team. And I remember calling Eric and saying, I really wanted to not like your kids. Your kids are awesome. I really wanted to not like them, but they're great kids. And again, what else would I expect? You run a great program. You're constantly ministering to these kids. Of course, that's what you're going to get. So I think that's the thing that, again, we always talk about is, again, we want to beat each other. We really do. But the more that we consistently keep chasing each other, you know, us moving up to this next level, we for sure want to be the two. We want to go 1 and 2. Again, we want to be 1. We want to make them 2, but we want to come up to the bigger level and say, we run the show here. Now, obviously we have to do that, but that's the goal, right? That's the vision that we have implanted here, is that it doesn't matter that we've moved up a level. We are 100% trying to win a state championship. No questions about that. And I will never change that goal. I don't care if we're in a quote rebuilding year or not. I think if you're shooting for anything less, again, what in the world are you doing? Some of the coaches in town here make fun of me that, you know, if you ask me that, hey, what do you think your record's going to be? 12-0. It's always 12-0. Why would I think that we would ever lose a game? Do I think there's really good teams? Yes. Do I think it's going to be hard to go 12-0? 100%. I've never been 12-0, but I always think that we're going to, because that's the way I'm approaching everything, is that we're going to win. We're here to win. And again, I would say that's exactly what Kinder does. But again, at the end of the day, if I go 12-0 and I haven't told these kids about who Jesus is, shame on me. That is not what we're into. And again, I know that that's our favorite thing to do, is to share stories of not just about your kids, but what is the gospel doing in these kids' lives? And the more that we do that, I think the better our teams are getting, because they're actually not playing for themselves. They're playing for one another. And the more that they find out it's not just one another, I'm actually playing for one.
I think that's one thing that, like, coaching football, that fires me up about coaching football and the love of football, is there's so many just nuanced things that connect to the gospel: love, self-discipline, laying down your life, like just being selfless. And those things translate, I guess probably don't translate, they come from the gospel of who Jesus is. So we can use those lessons of, hey, yes, this makes you a successful football player, but it's going to make you an even more successful follower of Christ, an even more successful father or husband someday down the line. So that's awesome. Kind of as we wrap up here, kind of concluding question is, you know, say there's a kid, an assistant coach that comes up to you and he's like, Tommy, there's something different about you, man. Like, you are fired up, you are jacked up, you're ready to go, but you're loving, you're kind, you're personal. You have something, and I want what you have. How would you respond to something like that if a coach or a kid asked you that?
I think that's the question I'm always wanting somebody to ask me. You know, that's why I try to live differently, so somebody says that. I get that. I would say I probably get that a couple times a year. Mr. Billy, why are you so, you're different. You are insanely passionate, but yet you really do seem like you actually love us. It's not like it's not just a word, right? And again, I try to tell them in that sense that I am this way because there was somebody that came into my life and radically changed my life, that actually showed me what real love is, that didn't care that I have lived a wild life, that I was a drunk, a thief, was a cheater, was all of these things, right? Was, you know, very manipulative. And yet he still said, I want that man. I still want that guy. Not this, again, not this futuristic person, but I want you right where you're at. And knowing that he came and died on a cross for me, and knowing that not just that, hey, I'm going to save your life, but I want more for you. I want more for you. I'm not calling you right where you're at. I've called you to do so much more. And I think that's the thing that I want these kids to know, right? Is that there's somebody out there, and his name's Jesus Christ, that has came and died for you to live a life that you couldn't live. He came and lived a life that you couldn't live. I shared this with my daughter one time, that because she couldn't understand, like, well, what do you mean that he's covered me with his blood? And I had this big jacket, and I took it and I covered her up. And I said, you know, when God sees you, he actually sees Christ. And when Christ was on the cross, it wasn't the perfect man there. It's actually you that he sees. And so getting kids to try to see that it's not, I don't have to clean my life up. I don't have to be this person that's gone to every Bible study, that's lived their life in church. Again, just come as you are. And if you do that, he's going to meet you right where you're at, and he doesn't want you to stay there. He's not calling you to stay where you're at. He's calling you for much more than that. So I try to tell them that as much as I can. And sometimes that turns into a great conversation. Sometimes that's like, oh, that's really cool. All right, I'll see you later. You know, like, and you got to be okay with that. And yeah. Again, I think that's what I've learned throughout my whole story, is that it's just a seed, man. You are not God. You are here to plant and to water, and God will do the growing. And that was, I had a really hard time with that, because I try to play savior all the time. I'm not God. I am not the savior of the world. I am only here to be a minister of his word and try to show you. And if you, hopefully that changes somebody. And if that doesn't, that's not my job. My job is to just plant seeds and to water those seeds that I plant. That's my goal. And hopefully with your podcast and what I do on a daily life, hopefully people see that.
Awesome. I hope so too. That's what we're here, is to hear awesome stories like you've shared today. So thank you so much for being a guest on the Stories of His Glory podcast. And thank you all for listening.
I appreciate it, man.
Thanks again for being part of Stories of His Glory. If today's episode inspired you, take a moment to share it. And be sure to follow or subscribe so you won't miss what's coming next. Psalm 96:3 reminds us to declare His glory among the nations, His wondrous works among all peoples. The field is yours. Now go glorify him.